Welcome to Atlanta Sales Talk Radio, where we are talking to sales and business leaders from the Metro Atlanta area that have been successful in sales and how sales has impacted their business, their lives, and what some of the things they've been and how what they've learned through that process and that journey. So with us today, we have two very exciting guests that I'm excited about having. We have Jack Nugent, one of the brain trust and leaders in developing an organization, Meridian Realty Consultants. And we'll be talking with Jack in just a moment. And we also have another dear friend and also someone I'm excited, sometimes excited about having, is Mr. Greg Fryker, who is the Vice President of Sales for U.S. Carrier, one of the leaders here in the telecommunications infrastructure space. So I'm looking forward to hearing a little bit more about what you're doing and what's going on these days. So with that, Jack, I'd like to see if I could ask you to introduce yourself a little better and more formally than I did, and what you're excited about today.
My name is Jack Nugent. I'm with Meridian Realty Consultants. We are a commercial real estate consulting firm that has two primary focuses. One is taking properties that landlords own, regional malls, office buildings, strip centers, and going through and making sure that the landlord is getting all the cash flow that they're entitled to. So that's one portion of our business. And the second portion of our business is actual financial due diligence and acquisitions of regional malls, office buildings, strip centers. So in terms of what we do, you know, we spend time reading leases all day long, verifying the information, and confirming the cash flow that a landlord would get from a property they're acquiring.
Now I'm looking for sex appeal here, Jack. I'm looking for sexy, and
you don't find it sexy.
It's tough to find sex appeal in reading commercial leases.
Oh, contraire, my friend. I'm thinking, in regards to when we've spoken in the past, you actually, if I break it down to you, help landlords make money, find lost or hidden money, and at the same time help them find really good assets. That's the two sides of your business.
Kind of that. We'll take a portfolio of regional malls, and you know, we'll do a project where you take one regional mall, it's 150 tenants, go back, read through all the leases, recalculate all the charges, and generate anywhere from $400,000 to $3.5 million in additional revenues. So
that's real money.
No, it's real money.
That's not funny money. That's real money.
It's not just one-time revenues, too. We identify how to increase that cash flow on a prospective basis. So they may have missed, an increase. They may have miscalculated something. And that affects not only the retroactive cash flow, but it also affects the prospective cash flow. And in commercial real estate, the value is all based upon cash flow.
Oh, really? Okay, that's interesting. So it's not the equity in the building, it's cash flow more in commercial real estate.
Exactly.
I didn't know that.
The bricks and mortar of the building really don't have much value in and of themselves. It's really the leases, the cash flow that you're going to generate out of those buildings. If you look around here in Atlanta, there's so many vacant buildings, and yeah, they have some value. It's replacement cost value. But if you take one that's occupied and you look at the cash flow that's generated from them, then you apply a capitalization rate to that, and that's where the value of that building is.
So, and I was curious, why would they, if I don't own in a mall, or I'm not a renter in a mall, but I would say in the selling process, if I'm trying to get someone to sit in my mall or to rent from me, if I own a mall, I might be giving some incentives to come in. Say the first couple months you have a rate of X, then it accelerates to go up to Y, and that's what's happening, and they're never changing?
It's on the strip center side. A strip center is an open-air shopping center that might be anchored by a supermarket. It's much more likely to see those incentives in open-air centers, strip centers. But in regional malls, it's all based upon who the anchors are for the regional mall, because the anchors are driving the visitors, the consumers. If you've got a Nordstrom Bloomingdale's anchored center versus a Sears Penney anchored center, you're going to get a different customer. You're going to get a different group of tenants that go in there, a different way to merchandise that property.
Interesting. So that helps in that the marketing of that particular mall. Is that part of it, or you're more analyzing the leases and the after that's been done?
It's all just analyzing the leases. So going back to sexy, there is no sexy in reading leases. But, you know, our type of business is the type of business that, you know, the owners of commercial real estate really don't want to do, but they need to have it done. So we are, in some cases, a necessary evil because, you know, if you screw up on what a lease says, it could really have an impact on the value of a property. You know, there's something called an exclusive use, and it might say that you've got a yogurt store and you're the only yogurt store that's allowed in this particular shopping center. But if you try to bring in another yogurt store, then the landlord is going to have to go back to the existing one and say, you know, we'd like to bring in another one. And that yogurt store has some real leverage in terms of what they can get. But if there is no exclusive use and you bring in a second yogurt store, then that first one's going to lose value. So it's not just the financial clauses, but it's the non-financial covenants of the leases that also have value.
Are there people like you on the tenant side as well? And do you guys talk to each other, or how does all that work?
There's many more on the tenant side because the tenants are all about recovering value. Mm-hmm. And when the tenants don't have the same access to records as I would have from a landlord perspective. So they don't have the ability to see everything that I do. So there's a lot more extrapolation that goes on. It's a lot more guesstimation. So they may go in and say, you know, we've paid you $50,000 in operating expenses, but it really should be $30,000, and they'll ask for that money back. But, you know, we can see exactly how that $50,000 was calculated, and maybe it was $55,000, maybe it was $45,000, maybe it was actually $50,000. But, you know, we go in there and we can verify that information.
And verify it on behalf of the tenant or the landlord.
Exclusively the landlord.
And to Stone's point, there's another side of the business, not your business, but other organizations that represent the tenant?
Exactly.
Okay. Sort of like in the personal or non-commercial real estate space where you have buyer's agents and seller's agents.
Exactly.
Are they two and the same these days?
In certain cases, they can, and you can get a waiver from who you're representing to say, yeah, I'd like to be the seller's agent and the buyer's agent. But in terms of what we do, we work with some of the largest owners in the country, and the last thing we want to do is go to them and say, we found that you overcharged this tenant $50,000, and we're going to collect. So.
Yeah,
so not a good long-term play.
No, not at all.
That's building strategic relationships. Oh, by the way, I did this for you last one. All right, good. Well, that's interesting. And we'll come back to talk about how you sell your services, because sure. I'm really intrigued with that. But now I'd like to jump over to Mr. Greg Fryker. And Greg, would you share with us a little bit where and how you got into sales?
Well, first of all, I want to say this Business Radio X concept is awesome. I love it. I was telling Stone I learned about yogurt franchises, so I think I'm going to jump into the Menchie's or
Our shows, right?
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you for the compliment.
It was very good. And Atlanta Sales Talk, I got to tell you, it's needed. I remember cutting my teeth in sales and getting these monthly cassette tapes on how to do sales and how to cold call. You remember that stuff?
Yeah, Tom Hopkins and company.
Right,
absolutely.
Exactly. Yeah. So, this is live, it's current, and here I am. So I appreciate the opportunity. How did I get in sales?
I think we just got sold.
Sure. We just bought something, I'm sure of it.
Hey, I am a sales guy, aren't I?
I've met your wife. Yes, yeah. You are. Definitely a sales wife.
You can always tell by the good sales guys. Anyway, coming out, I'm a people person, Steve. You know that.
Yes, absolutely.
But you know what? Sales is as you said earlier before we got on the air, everybody's in sales. So you massage yourself into determining what how you're going to be in a role of a salesperson. And currently now at U.S. Carrier, I have the best of both worlds, not only involved with management with two two great salespeople in our organization, but also handling the larger accounts like a Level 3 or a Sprint or a Verizon Wireless. So it gives me the hands-on, still pedal in the wares, if you will, and, mm-hmm. and still being the sales guy while having the opportunity to manage as well.
So now, but you're selling to those, so you're doing a dual role. So you're both leading and managing the team, and also then also going out and selling too, managing those relationships.
Yeah, back up, a U.S. carrier owns and operates a fiber network throughout the South, Georgia, Alabama, Panhandle, Florida, and we're truly an Atlanta-based company. We're owned by 20 independent, what's called local exchange carriers. They're the small independent guys up in LJ Telephone up in Blue Ridge or Alma Telephone down in Waycross, Georgia. So they collected their finances and created U.S. carrier about 10 years ago. So that's how we evolved. And so we are primarily what's called a carrier's carrier, strictly providing broadband services to other carriers and wireless carriers. There's the wireless guys, you're still using wireline services. You just got to aggregate all that traffic and bring it back to huge switches that they have throughout the state to get it elsewhere.
Right.
And that's what we do.
And so now, so that's really, and it's really, truly, you have all of the rights away and getting to fiber runs and fiber routes that pretty much no one else has.
Yeah, that's really important in our business is facility-based. As a carrier, if you're facility-based and own assets, that's very important. Similar in commercial real estate, if you own the asset, it's much more attractive than if you're leasing it. So we do own and operate this fiber network that's in the ground. And our play is primarily into the Tier 3, Tier 4 markets, the Waycrosses, Fitzgerald, Omegas, of Georgia that some of the other larger carriers either don't have facilities in or they prefer using another carrier to augment what they have existing.
Interesting. So along those lines, now you and I go way back in the telecom space, and I think it's, as I've seen over the years, telecommunications industry has morphed and changed, and I'm not even sure it's safe to call it telecommunications anymore, right? But there was a big demand, or let's say there was a glut of bandwidth. We might remember that back in the late 90s. You had all these companies building fiber around the world, and there was the capacity to send, you know, all the data in the world at 1 second through around the world. That glut, is that still around these days?
It is in certain areas. When you're looking at fiber that's already in the ground existing, new technology allows you to continually split that fiber in, more and more to get additional bandwidth out of the existing fiber. However, what's happening now is that there's a play for rural areas. You've may have heard through the government looking for increasing capacity in rural areas to allow areas that don't have internet now to exist.
Make sure they have an internet and can get access, broadband access to internet, DSL types of things, right?
In addition to that, data centers are huge. You know, you have Google, Amazon, some of the larger companies that have to put in data centers to either do some warehousing or to allow server farms to get closer to their constituents so that they can get this information faster to them. Gaming industry is a great example, you know, because those gamers, they want stuff up. They want it now. They don't want any delay. And so that's proliferating throughout the U.S. For existing. So there is existing main routes, you know, Chicago, New York, California, all those. But now it's expanding out into the smaller areas.
Interesting. So, but you had said something, these server farms and so on. But isn't all this stuff in Google and isn't that all going to the cloud?
Yeah, well, that's another reason why we're in business, I suppose, and that's really helping our cause because, now things are, instead of keeping your photos and your music on your hard drive, Now you can ship it out to a server farm or to a cloud and grab that information as you need it. So that's another great application that we're getting more and more involved with.
Yeah, because I had this conversation, Greg, and I think you'd get a kick out of it the other day, was, you know, why do you need servers, or co-location is going away, it's dying, co-location where you have server farms. Oh. Because this young individual was enlightening me about the fact that, you know, well, everything's going to the cloud, so of course there's no need for co-location anymore. And so what would you say to something like that, Mr. Clark?
I would say balderdash. It's only increasing. Companies like Telex, which owns a variety of co-location space. The big one here in Atlanta is 56 Marietta Street, mm-hmm. and almost all the carriers are located there. But those are getting more and more involved because you want connectivity with other carriers to get this traffic and move it elsewhere.
Right.
So
the cloud, I mean, that's a neat little metaphor, but right. there's actually things and stuff that are holding my Google Docs, right? It's
Absolutely.
Not really sitting in a cloud. It's yeah. really sitting on a server. Am I right? I mean, I'm not a technical guy.
Yeah, it's technically just a big space with lots of routers and hard drives to right. collect that information.
So your business is just going up and up. It's not really going away from that. And the same thing, wireless. There's a lot of wires still involved with wireless, just not right directly in my immediate space. But there's a lot of wires somewhere out there, right, handling
sure,
my wireless?
Absolutely. I mean, it's just a shift. You know, before right. 10 years ago, we had all wireline and telephony and so forth. And now that's completely out. Now we're looking at data applications and wireless applications as well. So it's just a big shift. But you still need the fiber in the ground to get that stuff. Because it creates so much bandwidth that you need tangible assets in the ground to move that stuff.
Oh, to connect to it, connect to the
right.
cloud, so to speak.
Yeah, exactly.
And these clouds are really co-location centers.
Right.
And we have an upcoming guest from Total Quality Services that's going to be on the show, and they have just acquired and built out 1 million. Square feet of co-location space in the metro.
That's a big cloud.
That's a big cloud.
I got a question about this, and I really am not technical at all, so forgive me. But these things that are running through the ground, can you rent it to me and Steve, or can you only rent it or sell it to one of us? Or can multiple companies use the same?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Generally, what happens is you're feeding it into a building. So if you're home and you want to have a 10 gigabit circuit that comes into your circuit, which is a very big circuit, by the way, you could actually have someone construct a circuit that comes into your house, connects up to some type of device that will provide that bandwidth to your computer or to whatever else you're using. So it's essentially, there's two main areas in telecom. One's long haul, which U.S. carrier is. We provide the service from a Savannah to Atlanta. Then you have local exchange carriers, which actually bring the fiber from that 56 Marietta, where I was saying all the carriers are, brings it out to different buildings or, you know, to this building where we're in today. And so they take that portion of it and terminate.
But a lot of people are sharing the long haul highway.
Yeah.
A lot of companies.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Not just one.
Right, right. So it's all pushed on those pipes.
Gotcha.
Just like a big fire hose goes down to, to a little garden hose.
But how's that for a leveraged asset? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's terrific.
Yeah,
you own the asset. Right. Then you can come and call Jack and have him then view your leases. Well, that's interesting because you have now multiple leases on the same physical asset, right?
Yeah, and see, a lot of people like to buy dark fiber. What's dark fiber is essentially you actually own the fiber that's in the ground, as opposed to what we do is we lease the fiber, but we also take care of that, maintain it, light up the fibers to create the network that's available. So there's two facets there.
Interesting.
But, yeah. So a lot of companies now are building new routes and dumping fiber into the ground or aerially.
Aerially, they're putting fiber in the air.
Yeah, telephone poles.
Oh, telephone poles. Right. Yeah. Got it.
All not the clouds, Steve.
Yeah, I get that.
It's a little lower.
He's so confused.
Talk about sexy, huh, Steve?
Yeah, this is
telecom
thing. Yeah, yeah, okay. That's right. All right. So with all that said, now we know about you know, what's happening in the real estate, commercial real estate space, and how you're making money for your clients, and helping them buy the right assets. And then at the same time, thinking about technology and how you're enabling the cloud in a lot of ways, you know, for the rural customers and the rural providers. So with that said, how do you sell your services? So what do you see as some of the things that, Jack, you have seen be successful when you're actually working and selling to?
Well, I'm very fortunate in that real estate itself, commercial real estate, is very incestuous. So if you've worked with one person, it's kind of like that Kevin Bacon game. You know, the 7 degrees of, or 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. I can pick any company in any city and probably not have to go more than 2 or 3 people deep to get to someone in that company.
Right.
And because everybody kind of moves around. It's an industry, once you get into it, you love it or you hate it. And people tend to, you know, get in, get out, or stay forever. You know, my background is, I'm a CPA, but I have absolutely no value whatsoever outside of commercial real estate. So what our greatest method of selling is really just servicing the existing clients, keeping them happy, because eventually what happens is, you know, someone will leave that company and take us to that next company. So where we had one client, we now have two. You know, within the past month and a half, we had a new client that has a West Coast office and an East Coast office. And my partner up in Philadelphia got a call from the East Coast office, and I got a call from the West Coast office. Neither one knew that they were speaking to us. We had two separate projects from the same company, and both were referred. One person on the East Coast office had been at a company we had done business with before. Really? And the other had gotten a reference from an existing client. So it's kind of this spider web where you take care of people, absolutely, and then they kind of bring you along.
That's interesting. It's very much along the lines where you've heard the saying, particularly in this new social media world, where the new marketing, the way to market in this new world, is customer service. Because if you have a bad experience, what happens? People will talk about it, and they'll get upset. And all the friends on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, wherever it might be, let them know that they're unhappy. And vice versa, sometimes they let them know they are happy. So the idea is that the new marketing is customer service. You have them a great relationship or a great experience in working with Meridian, then that pays dividends, is what I'm sounding. And actually, here's the case study right there for that.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, I'm personally a technician. I do sales, I do marketing, but I really consider myself a real estate person first. We don't have a separate sales or marketing group within the organization, so we rely on our own people doing our work. Another gentleman, Peter McGowan, who is the president of the company, he's up in Philadelphia, and he's responsible for the business. I'm responsible for generating business, and neither one of us is that great at, you know, sales and marketing. It's our clients that are actually the ones that are good at sales and marketing.
I think you're cutting yourself short there, Jack. I've met your wife. You sold beyond your headlights there, brother.
Oh, I know that.
I say that with all the utmost respect and love, my friend. But yeah, no, it's absolutely. And I think you're not officially in sales, but it's also, I think, of everyone you're touching. You're managing your customers. I think it's a great example of, you know, it's our reputation is what sells us. And you're getting referrals that way.
Exactly.
It's almost selling through referrals. I love that idea.
Exactly.
So, yeah, absolutely. So, Greg, same question. How are you selling your services? I mean, especially in this world where there still may be a fiber glut, and what differentiates you, or why? Why a U.S. carrier?
Yeah, you're familiar somewhat with the business from being in the in the background of it. It's a very closed loop business. We sell only to carriers. We don't go out to enterprise accounts. So it's very, you said the word incestuous, very, very true. Everybody buys and sells from each other. So getting back on your support, I agree. I mean, in my knowledge base of sales for the last 30 years, it's, you just have to be there. I mean, 90% of it's being there and supporting your customer. And if you do that, then you're a lot step ahead of most most people. And if you can get back to them quickly and provide services. And so anyway, I digressed on that, but
no,
I think it's really important. Customer service, like you said, is very important. We don't have, because we're not an enterprise, we don't have a large net to throw across and try to get additional customers. We know who our customers are, so we just got to support those. And what's our secret sauce? Well, because we are a small, what we're considered as a regional carrier as opposed to an AT&T or a Verizon or a Sprint that has nationwide coverage, we're going to give that quick response, whether it be providing a quote, whether it's fixing a circuit that's down, whether it's giving them information on a previous bill. And I've been on both sides of the equation, and I'll tell you, a small company, you have some ills, but for the most part, it's much more advantageous because you can act quickly, including negotiating contracts.
And it just struck me as both Jack and you and Greg were sharing, it's almost along the lines of easy to do business with. You have the relationship, they know you, so there's a relationship, but...
You really have to try to make it, as turnkey as possible, where we're taking the time to actually go through, we're doing an acquisition, and, it's a two-office building acquisition, and the client's spending $300 million. Our services on something like that are, $30,000, and we'll take the time. It's the one time, one opportunity to go through every single piece of paper related to a single tenant. And the client will tell us, yes, we need these 10 data points. But because we've been working with each one so long, or because we've been doing it so long, we'll be going through the files and find the other things that if they had the time to do it themselves, they would say, I'm glad I went through this file because I found this. So we become an extension of our client's business. We try to make it as turnkey as possible because they don't, it is ease of doing business. You don't want them to have to do anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So
they don't go away. So that's some,
exactly.
That makes sense.
But recruiting, it strikes me that recruiting would be tough in both of your arenas because, I feel like recruiting someone to sell what we do would be a slam dunk. It's just not... But to recruit someone in such a close-knit arena that's got to be relationships that have been built over years, what is that challenge like?
I think you can't bring someone out of college and have 5 years' experience to do what we're doing now. I don't think there is a knowledge base that has to be created before you can get into the areas that we're in now.
And that's clearly the case. Our competition right now, there's some of the big four accounting firms, there's some of the large law firms that do it, but our main competition is actually outsourced to India, the Philippines, and to Israel.
Really?
And,
interesting.
We have a tough enough time finding people here in the United States that can actually read and understand the nuances of leases. When it comes to doing work for our clients overseas, if a lease is not in English, we actually can't do the work because there's too many nooks and crannies in a lease that if we don't really understand the language, it makes it difficult. So there was a 3-4-5 year period where we weren't losing business, but we were seeing potential customers go overseas. And, there's 10-20% savings when you go overseas to, do the type of work that we do. But when you're talking about, a $6 billion acquisition and a savings of, $20,000-$30,000, it's just not, in my opinion, it's not worth it.
It's not worth it. If you just, somebody's going to spend $300 million and your project that's going to make sure that you do good due diligence for that $300 million acquisition, it's going to cost them $30,000. I won't go into percentages. Math is not all. I'm worried about saving a couple thousand dollars on that deal? No, it makes no sense. So that's the secret sauce right there, I think, in regards to what you're doing, is you bring the expertise.
Right.
And the experience. And I think back to Stone's point, the recruiting.
Now, if I can make Stone, what you brought up with regards to talent base and so forth, we made our business model a conscious decision just to go with business to business, if you will, carriers. So we don't sell enterprise, because when you go into enterprise, and that's where things really expand. We have 50 employees, probably three quarters of them are technicians. So when you're dealing with a carrier, they kind of know what they want. That, you know, they're saying, hey, we're knowledgeable. This is what we want. Can you guys do it? Where commercial side of things, it's a little bit different. You're going to have to expand customer support. You're going to have to expand sales, et cetera. So we're a conscious decision just to go with a business-to-business environment or a carrier.
Well, you need the experience and bring that together. Yeah. So with that said, now it could be a little bit to someone coming out of college looking at saying, hey, I'm going to reach out to Greg, or I'm going to reach out to Jack, because they may have some opportunities. Well, I think after the interview, I realized that maybe not these particular companies. But with that said, what might you give as input and guidance to someone who came up to you and said, hey, Jack, tell me, what do I need to know? What's the most important thing in regards to sales or building and starting my career in commercial real estate or just in sales?
I would say really look at it from the long term, and you know, don't personally. I've never looked at the short term wins. I've looked at the long term, and I've given up things in the short term to ensure the long term success. Many of the people I started in this business back in 1987, and I've never been one about just selling up to the senior people at a company. I've always worked at, selling to all levels within an organization, making them, happy with our services. And many of those people that I started with in the 80s and, the 90s have grown to executive levels, to that business decision-making level that can actually bring me in. And, today we still... if we're going out to a prospective client, we're doing some business there. We are trying to take care of the executives, but at the same time, we'll spend some time with the file clerks, because if we can make their jobs easier, or if we're not a burden to them, then that kind of good feedback gets back to the executives. So it's really taking a long-term perspective on everything that you do, instead of, you can make $100,000 quickly, but, is it better to, make $50,000 for, 20 years as opposed to $100,000 for 1 year and be done?
Be done, absolutely. Great insight. So building the reputation, really, it sounds like reputation is key, and working with everybody in the organization.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. Greg, your thoughts?
Well, I would say, particularly if getting started in sales and so forth, a mentor is so important to create shortcuts to get that knowledge. I've been blessed with bosses that have been, and I think everyone's gone through that, where you've taken the good parts of all the bosses. My current one now, Jack Roberts, just provides a lot of autonomy, allows you to make your decisions and with guidance. But I think mentoring is really important, and for people getting involved in sales, that if they can, either through a boss or through some other senior official that kind of has the knowledge and
experience,
what path to go and what path not to go, that's huge. And enthusiasm, man, you gotta be liking getting up in the morning, going to work, and doing it. Everyone likes an enthusiastic person.
Absolutely. And one of the things, Stone, did you have a question?
Oh, I got a ton of questions, but we'll have to have them come back on another show. No, go ahead. I've got a couple questions that I want to make sure I get in, but no, go ahead.
Sure, I was just curious. Along those lines is talking to, if you look at having built teams and led teams, I know you had a pretty big organization that's gone up and down over the years, is reflecting the commercial real estate market, I think. And also, I think back, Greg, of the size of organizations, the ebbs and flows and mergers and acquisitions and everything that you've been through. If you think about the people that you've led and managed over your years, not that there's a lot of years, because I know you guys are really relatively young, with that said, what would you see as the biggest challenge for those that have been successful and those that haven't? What's the big differentiator?
Going along with what Greg had said, it's really, it's the passion. Those that are passionate about what they do, are absolutely, without a doubt, the most successful. And you know, if someone's looking for a job to come in and get a paycheck, you know, they might be successful in the short term, but in the long term, the passion makes all the difference in the world.
Interesting.
And it's cliched, but you got to have your customer in mind, not the paycheck, not yourself. But if you keep that in mind and that you're supporting your clients, you'll do fine. But if you're looking for the, you know, shortcut to get a good commission and be done with them and never see them again, you're going to be short-lived.
Interesting. Good. So did you have one of your questions, and then we'll keep going here.
Not really. You addressed one of them, but I wanted to dive into this rural thing because it seems to be a focus for you guys. We had someone on one of the shows a few weeks ago, and she was connected somehow to this medical effort of getting a doctor that might be downtown Atlanta, but able to come over some kind of technology and talk to Farmer Joe. Are you guys facilitating that in some way or a part of that effort?
Well, actually, our clients are, but you know, we're provide that that bandwidth to them. But yeah, that's really
huge.
Important. You know, another thing is, and especially in rural Georgia, is just agriculture. Getting those big wands, those big sprayers to turn on at a certain point, or to know when to turn that on. It's all computerized now. And so that's a big part of the business down in lower Georgia, because there's not a lot of population there, but there's agriculture is real important for that kind of thing, and like you said, hospitals and public service initiatives, those are the big drivers right now.
Never really thought about agriculture as becoming more and more automated or more technical, and yeah. I mean, the bigger farms and so on. Yeah,
exactly.
And I would say also the same for the malls. I see everything coming on with the malls in regards to technology and increasing bandwidth. And I have to imagine, is that part of what you're seeing as a trend in regards to the mall ownership or malls?
That actually started at, probably 96, 97, 98, where some of the biggest players in the industry, the Simons, the General Growth, the Urbans actually got together, created a company, Merchant Wired, that would go in, and they would actually put the connections all throughout the mall so that, you know, they could touch the customers a little bit more.
Interesting. And so they started a whole other business segment for them, and that was a joint venture between them all. And
they did.
And is that for wiring, hard wiring? I imagine now it's wireless also.
It was hard wiring initially, and you know, I think that they actually sold off those businesses because, you know, it's an ancillary business. They're not good at that type of thing. They have to focus on their core business, which is merchandising the properties. But, you know, there is a tremendous need for that on the commercial side. It's never ending. And every building has to be wired, and there's, you know, multiple carriers in every building.
Jack, I've seen a big proliferation of seasonal stuff like the Halloween stores and so forth that takes over the abandoned stores and creates them for a few months. Or is that becoming more and more relevant in your business? Or?
It is relevant because, you know, there's retail development programs, which the intent is to get prospective business into a cart, and then eventually into a kiosk, and then into possibly a temporary inline, then a permanent inline. So it's taking the time to develop fledgling businesses. But you know, as the, you know, businesses come in and out, you know, the long term retailers, you know, some of them have gone away. You know, there was a major proliferation
easy for you to say.
of bankruptcies in the, you know, 2007, 2008. And the last thing you want to do is create an environment where you've got vacant storefronts. So, you know, the Halloween Express, the Voodoo Halloween stores, you know, I mean, it just, that creates a more dynamic environment by just having those temporary tenants in there.
It's kind of interesting. You can kind of compare it to temporary work, where you know a temporary goes into a business and works a little bit, and then they say, "All right, well, we're going to need this person now." And it's very similar. You know, it's kind of a trial period. See how it works. If it's successful, then you can continue to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. All right, gentlemen, I have another question for you. The whole world of social selling, as we're seeing, this is a term defining, emerging, whatever that is, social selling. It's an intriguing idea. But the use, I think it's really associated, as I'm defining it, around social media. How are you seeing social media impact your business and your business, Greg?
Well, I'm betting Jack would say the same thing with it, that it's limited. Because of the closed environment that we're in, at least, I'm taking. You're looking at me like, no, that's not exactly what I'm not saying.
Jack's looking at Greg cross-eyed.
Yeah, right. Cross-eyed. I'm not sure what that means. He's throwing his arms across. And
don't
saying,
ask that
that's
question.
The stupidest thing I ever heard. For us, because we have a limited a client base, it's not that relevant to. As I said before, cast a large net out. It's important, I guess, for keeping some of the maybe new technologies that we haven't looked at, like county government or something like that. But for us, we know the clients. It's only a handful of clients that we serve, so it's not that relevant in our business.
Okay.
Well, sure. We do have a little bit more relevance. Yes, you know, when you look at retail real estate or commercial real estate, the top 20 own the majority in both avenues. But when you look at, you talk about mom and pop retailers, but there's mom and pop landlords out there that you know, might own, you know, 10, 15 properties. And I mean, like... it's not really mom and pop. I mean, they've got
dollars in assets right there.
Right, they've got a good business. But the one thing we actually heavily use Twitter to do research, and the reason we use it is because there's information out on Twitter that you know comes out weeks ahead of. You know, most print media and even, you know, days ahead of online media. You know, I'll go in when I've got a little bit of time and I'll do a search on something, you know, shopping center sale or shopping center sold. And you get a lot of irrelevant data, but, you know, you'll see data on a regular basis that, you know, this property just sold today. You know, and we can make a contact immediately. It's an after the fact contact. You know, you just sold that, you know, keep us in mind for the next time. But what's really nice is that we're able to find those mom and pop landlords that we wouldn't know otherwise because they don't make the list of the top 50, the top 100, but they're out there on Twitter getting their information out there.
Interesting. So you're almost using it as a way to enhance the relationships and expand the relationships that you have.
Expand the relationships as opposed to enhance.
So when I think about that, because you're not necessarily using it to prospect, well, maybe a little bit.
A little bit.
But more so, and I hear, Greg, where you were going was, it doesn't per se, because we're not prospecting. We have a finite group of people.
Yeah, that's kind of how I look at social media is that it's it creates more opportunities. And so we have limited opportunities. We have to pounce on the opportunities that we have.
Got it. Okay. Interesting. Because I just wonder, because I'm looking at, there's a trend in the whole social media around really using it to enhance relationships. I was in an interesting show, an event last night, with talking about marketing automation and how social media is helping to nurture leads or nurture relationships. You may have someone who's one of your prospects that is not ready to buy, or they have a project that they're going to be ready at the end of 2012 when they run out of capacity and they need more. How do we maintain and stay in front of them? And they're utilizing social media in different ways that I had never really thought of. So I just start to see that as a growing trend. That's why I was curious as to what your response were. The other one that here's a question that I think of, and this is a kind of a scary stat, if you will, as a sales professional and sales consultant myself, thinking about if you look at the trend of the sales profession, it's an interesting. I mean, it used to be that you couldn't necessarily if you couldn't find a job doing your as a CPA, you went out and you became a salesperson, right? I think we're seeing that change a little bit, and I think it's become there's more sales tracks in colleges and universities that make it more of a profession. But I still see a trend, which is there's less and less salespeople out there. And it's if you think about, have you ever bought anything from Amazon? Is that everyone bought something?
Oh yeah, I buy all kind of stuff from Amazon. Man.
And how many salespeople have you spoken to there?
Absolutely none. You're right.
So
great point.
And you think, all right, so what does that mean for the profession of sales? And what does that look like as we emerge and grow into this new world of a networked online experience in society? I just
now, does that transcend into a business to business environment? I mean, that's strictly, you know, I guess it could.
It might, but it may not either. I mean, it's I don't know. That's a question that I think of.
We have one client. This was probably 2006, 2007. That did they did an expansion of a mall that they had in Minnesota, and they did the financing entirely online. It was a $77 million loan that they did entirely online. And maybe it wasn't the greatest thing in the world to do, but that's not social media, but online.
Loans online.
It was amazing. It was amazing. Now, I don't think that would happen again today after what we've seen over the past, you know, 3-4 years.
So, right.
It was
that's
very
the cause of it.
That's right. Part of that real estate market just screwed everything up. The idea around that is a postmortem. They did it completely online, and has it been paying them benefits, or what do they gain from that?
It had paid them benefits, but you know, I think the lender may have suffered a bit.
Ah, okay. Well, there you go.
Because it wasn't, you know, you need to you know, do that face to face to really understand a project. You really need to. Commercial real estate's an odd animal, and it's not something that you can just say, "All right, send me the information."
Right, and it's a little bit different animal. That makes sense, and it's because what I hear in that, even though, is that you know, and I hear this from a lot of my clients. You know, our business is different, and commercial real estate may be a little bit different, but I think there's always some trends and some themes throughout all business today.
Yes.
And even though things can get automated and go online, and they may have less of a personal touch, I still think in sales, it's always going to need to have some level of touch. I'm just curious as to where's that inflection point?
Yeah, I mean, look at buying a car. I mean, you spend so much time now, or at least you should, researching a car, right? You're like, all right, this is it. Then you go in and then negotiate but there still has to be, I guess, an interface. But I bet some people wouldn't mind just buying a car online, right?
And it's been done. Auto Trader, the growth of Auto Trader
is
a big example of that. All right. Any last thoughts as we wrap up our show? I think some really good insights and some really good sharing. So did I get everything, Greg? Jack?
Yeah, I think so. I was just looking at some notes that I put down, but you know, besides the mentoring and enthusiasm, I think it's really important to have a foundation, a personal foundation, that whether you're married or you're single, that it's a solid foundation, and it's really important to have that so you can go to work each day and feel good about yourself coming home. So, I think that's an important trait to have.
Balance. Would you say the balance?
Sure. I think that's a good way to say it.
Good. Because, you know, what are some of the hobbies or things that you do to balance yourself? And you don't have to answer it if you don't need to. That's not a loaded question.
My attorney has asked me not to answer that question.
All right. Going to my next guest, Jack. So how do you keep balancing your life? I do know one thing about you, Jack. You're an avid runner. So...
I am a runner. I don't look like it, but I enjoy running. Just a plug for the Atlanta Track Club, greatest organization in Atlanta. You know, they've got 15,000 members that And I'm very active with that organization, whether I'm running a race or volunteering for a race. So I take a lot of pleasure in participating with that group.
I like it. Well, and I think you have a moniker special out on Twitter about your running endeavors. Did you want to share that?
It could be Fat Men Running.
I think, which I ask you about that is because we're both on there, and actually we do tweet from that every now and then. To Fat Men Running. So it's at Fat Men Running, and you can find us on Twitter. Jack's much better at that, by the way, in regards to running. I'm currently injured, so I can't run very fast. But absolutely. So, well, thanks, Jack. Greg, I appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming on the show, sharing, I think, some really great insights, some information around the industry, both of your industries, that I found really interesting. So when I asked about sex appeal, I think there's some really sexy, interesting components to that. And you're always about sex appeal here on the show. So
thanks, Steve. I had a great time here.
Well, I'll tell you what would be fun. I'd like to do sometime if you guys are up to it. I think it would be fun in both of these cases, since it's such a close-knit kind of thing, to maybe come on sometime with a delighted client and explore that relationship and hear about it from their perspective, how the relationship works. I think it would be a very interesting show. And I think we would get insights that about the way you guys work and why you're as successful as you are, that maybe you're not as prepared to articulate as your delighted client is. So if you guys would be up for that sometime, I think I'd make for a marvelous show.
I like that.
I can do that.
A delighted client, you say?
You have at least one, right?
I think so.
Yeah, there's to be no money exchanging hands, Greg, about that client.
That's good to know, Steve. Right, well,
so appreciate, and again, I say the tongue-in-cheek, I really do appreciate all the time and energy you guys put into preparing for today and actually sharing all the information you did. I think the listeners got something out of it. I know I certainly did. Stone, I think, got something out of it. I won't speak for him. He's nodding his head for everyone that's listening.
I spoke for Jack. You might as well speak for Stone.
I thoroughly enjoyed it. I thought it was terrific. You guys did a terrific job, and I enjoyed every minute of it.
So, and if someone wanted to reach out and connect with you, what would be a way to do that, Greg?
I think the best way is to get on the web, uscarrier.com, and that'll show our network. And if you have any requirements, Stone, for connecting to your house, you can look it up that way. uscarrier.com.
I want that 10 gigaboogie thing.
You're right, you're not tech.
and Jack, if someone happens to be a mall owner or is looking to acquire a mall, how might they get in touch with you?
Just phone one of our two offices. Atlanta is 770-410-1700 and Philadelphia is 610-828-4200.
Outstanding. And your website is?
www.meridianrc.com.
Outstanding. Gentlemen, I appreciate your time. And this is Steve Cadley from Atlanta Sales Talk Radio. And just reminding you, have fun out there, continue to sell, and remember, everybody's in sales.